Blog Talk Radio.
This is one mic. Can we be real?
Right.
I'm going to step the line of people. Now, if you step over the line, I'm going to say something about it. This is one mic. This is one mic, please.
Yeah. You know, Big Papa would have been proud of what he saw happen this weekend. Knowing him, it wouldn't have been Drake on the front line. There probably would have been B.I.G. somewhere sitting front and center. The energy was live this weekend. It was incredible. A couple of games yesterday, and we're set up for a great finals. This is one mic. This is our podcast. This is a way for me to stretch my legs and have an opportunity to get, you know, one or two of my comrades to be in space, and I just let them just throw up whatever they need to throw up. It's a different thing than our big show, but it's just another element of what we try to do at RSG. And throughout the tournament, we've been doing these short segments, kind of checking in on where we're at, and we're going to do that again tonight with my man, the Game Changer. But before I bring him in, I want to give y'all a little insight to kind of what we were talking about even before the tournament started. Because now we're at the championship game. We want to get a sense. If y'all been paying attention to the RSG tournament, you know where I sit. But we had a lot of opinions. And so I got about a 4-minute clip here to just set the tone before we bring Game Changer in to really drop some hard stuff on us.
So... But we kind of run the gamut. You can see kind of how the real sports guys apply their formula. And we all got a little something different, man. It's going to be interesting how this plays out. Let's get to the Final Fours. All right? Unveil your Final Fours. Larry, who do you got?
I got Kentucky versus Wisconsin.
Okay.
I got Michigan State versus the Zags.
Gonzaga, that's one. I don't know about that one. I've seen the Zags. They're good, but they got some holes. All right. D. Wills, your Final Four.
All right. I got Kentucky against Wisconsin, Michigan State against Duke.
Sparty's getting love right now. Sparty's getting love from the real sports guys. They're getting a lot of love right now. PhD, your Final Four.
Wait.
When you start off like that, I got to get to the board. Get some ready for you. Okay. Let me get myself ready. Go ahead.
Well, guys, I'm going through. Very vanilla here. I have 3 number one seeds and a 6 seed. The 6 seed is Providence. The 3-1 seeds are Duke, Wisconsin, and Kentucky. Yeah. Sorry
okay.
to disappoint. I was, man.
Come on, man. I was expecting something crazy from you, brother. In the end, it all comes clean in the end, though. My Final Four,
yep.
I got Kentucky, I got Wisconsin, I got Virginia, and I got Iowa State. So that's my Final Four. Larry, championship game.
Well, the tough matchup for me is Kentucky versus Wisconsin, but like I said, I don't think anybody's gonna stop Kentucky. So I got them in the championship game. And then I got Michigan State against the Zags, and that's kind of a coin flip too, but I'm going to keep going with the Zags. Let it ride.
Wow. Okay, Zags going to the title game. All right. D-Wills, let's get it.
This is where I get the upset. I go with Wisconsin over Kentucky. I always said if Bo Ryan ever let them play fluently offensively, they're going to make something happen. And then and then I got Duke. It'll be Wisconsin against Duke, a rematch of the Kohl Center.
Okay. PhD, who you got?
Wisconsin versus Duke.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got Kentucky. I got Kentucky and Virginia. Tony Bennett with that defense. I got Kentucky with Virginia. Larry, champion. Go.
Kentucky, all the way.
D. Wills, go.
This is from my classmate, Duyay, boy. We got Wisconsin. Bring it home, baby.
Okay. First national championship for Wisconsin, or second. I think they got one like 1941. PhD, champion, go.
Wisconsin.
Wow. Two votes for Bucky.
Yeah.
I went chalk in Kentucky. I got Kentucky winning it, bringing it home again. So I got KU in the house. That does it for this edition of the.
Wow. That was interesting to listen to now after watching all this stuff and seeing the championship game. You know, we got to bring our man in. You know, he is. Like he's versatile. When you talk about a lot of different sports, this guy brings it. But when you talk about basketball at any level, I put him up against anybody in the business at any level. And it's great to have him on tonight to do this short track with us. The Game Changer. What's up, baby?
What's good, man? What's good? I'm here to play this man. EP. This is like the EP version of Real Sports Guys. You know how guys used to drop that maxi single, that EP back in the 90s when, you know, you can get a single, the cassette single, you know, to have like two or three joints on it, you know. So this is our version of that. I'm here to blaze it with my man, do a little guest appearance. Yeah, man, it's interesting to hear that clip.
What do you think about it? Before we jump in, like, think about some of the stuff. So we had a Providence call in there. We have a Gonzaga one. Your analysis of Gonzaga is pretty one on, right on. I know what the Providence one, I want
you
to say.
You smoke crack, don't you?
But and I know you had that one waiting. You were waiting on it. You said, let me pull up something. I know you want to pull that up on him.
But it
was a gutsy call. Everybody knows how I rolled on my four on that. I'm sitting pretty and everything. I was Nostra D. Wills on this thing, doing what I do. But you had Virginia, and a lot of people would have Virginia, you know, in terms of, you know, the way they played all year. I just think they're another version of the previous version of Bucky. And once Bennett does some of the things, I think Ryan is learning, letting some of his players expand their game offensively, flow a little bit. I think you'll see some of that success come out of his program as well. But when you listen to that, like, what does that make you as you reflect on it? You know, think about, you know, what you see, you know, now that you kind of know how it played out.
The tournament is such a different animal. I mean, you have 64, 68 teams, and, you know, really you're just trying to figure out, okay, which team is going to get the hottest. You're trying to predict matchups, and it's a crapshoot. You hit it. I think my man PhD, he hit it on the head. He had Duke and Wisconsin in his final game, which he's right on, so I'm sure he's scoring points. But it is a matchup of styles, and styles win games. And, you know, it's the most, in my opinion, it's the most fun sporting event on the U.S. sports calendar. It's the World Cup, but it happens every year. That level of excitement that it brings for U.S. sports fans. But it's a different kind of an animal. It doesn't matter what you did during the regular season. Your draw, you know, your kids, you're dealing with 19 to 22-year-olds, and, you know, who knows where their minds are in a particular week. It's all everything is truly up for grabs within a one and done setting. Any team can get beat once on a given night. If some of these teams play, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, I think if Kentucky and Wisconsin play 10 times, I think Kentucky probably wins 6 out of the 4 times. You know, but that doesn't matter. Wisconsin needed to beat them last night, and so they did, and now they get to play for the national championship. So it's just a different animal in that sense that it is truly a one-and-done situation. And then you move on and you get a week to prepare, and then you go play somebody at play another 2 games. So
one of the things, before we jump into some of these things, Art, one thing that's kind of been interesting about, and particularly with Kentucky, Wisconsin, and Duke, is the ability to kind of have versatile bigs. You know, having guys, either having a lot of bigs, but also having these versatile bigs. Not just a concept of a stretch 4 or 5, but, you know, guys who can actually do it. I mean, when you think about Wisconsin, when you're running screen rolls with a, you know, 6'9" Decker and a 7-foot Kaminsky. When you think about Okafor's ability, I mean, that bank shot he hit was Duncan-esque, you know, but ability to play in space and do some different things. And the Kentucky kids who can, you know, are versatile in many different ways. What do you make of this, these versatile bigs, and how important? I mean, they're evolving in a different way than I think we've even seen them in a long time.
Well, you know, for a long time, and, you know, at my core, I'm an NBA guy. I follow the college game because it helps me see future guys who may be playing in the league and gives me context of what guys are and can do and where they've been developed and that kind of thing. But ultimately, at my core, I'm an NBA guy. And the NBA game has moved away from pop it in, go down low bigs, you know, set them up on the block, throw it into them 25 times a game. Is moved away from that as a whole. There are still some teams that do that. When you talk about the Memphis Grizzlies with Gasol and Randolph, you know, they split it between two guys, but they really pound you inside. But within that, there's some versatility to it, and there's some interesting skill sets. The game has evolved to the point where the big man no longer is expected to simply just be enclosed kind of a player. And I think that's a good thing. Nowadays, you still need bigs. I think, you know, that's something that I've even fallen to as thinking about the NBA, because I get stuck in that traditional center. I grew up in the 90s. I came into the game and I was bred on 90s basketball, where you had the golden age of the back-to-the-basket big man with Akeem, David Robinson, Pat Ewing, you know, all those guys who were putting in work as traditional back-to-the-basket big men. Well, today, you know, you still need, when you look at the best teams in the league, they still have big men. When you talk about the Atlanta Hawks, the Golden State Warriors. But their bigs do different things, and their bigs aren't always offensive players, but they allow their offense to run in a certain way. The game has moved towards spacing, so bigs need to be able to shoot. They need to be able to pass. We talk about Andrew Bogut for the Golden State Warriors. He can defend. He's an amazing passer for a big man. You talk about Marc Gasol, same thing. He can defend. He can score. He can shoot from the perimeter. He's also an excellent passer. Al Horford. You know, he gives the Atlanta Hawks that kind of – when you look at the top teams in the league, though, they have bigs who can play basketball. They're not just – you know, this is always my rap on my issue with Dwight Howard. I never felt he was a basketball player. He was a 6'11" and could jump out of the gym. But I never felt like he understood how to play basketball. And there's a difference between being athletically gifted and knowing how to play the game. And I don't think Dwight really ever learned how to play the game or committed himself to learning how to play the game. But now you see, you need to have bigs who can play basketball. Anthony Davis, you know, you got guys like Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, guys who are 6'11 plus, who can handle the ball, Dirk Nowitzki, you know, guys like that. So there are tons of examples of big men who have versatile skill sets, and that's where the league is going. And you're seeing that trickle down into college as, you know, kids now have to go to college. So you're going to see some of these guys before they hit the NBA playing in college programs. And when you have that versatile big, you know, they may not be, again, like Okafor's more of a traditional back to the basket, throw him the ball, let him go to work. But Towns, he can do some of that, but he can also step out and hit the jump shot. Kaminsky's just kind of a jack of all trades. He can do a little bit of everything. it's a really tough guard because of all those guys, you still have to respect the back-to-the-basket game. So because of that, you can't just put a little guy on them. You have to guard them with a big or else they can't hurt you inside. But because you got them with a big, now they can do some things on the perimeter. It warps your defense. It warps your defensive system because now you don't have rim protection against the other players. And you have to respect these guys on the perimeter. You know, and they all bring different skill sets to the table, but they all are used in different ways. And you have three master coaches who are doing some amazing things with how they utilize the different skill sets of each player, which I think is really what you see happening here is that they each have dynamic players and they figured out how to utilize those dynamic players within their systems and create some really stylistically interesting things that can happen on the court as far as matchups, style of play, et cetera. And that's what good coaches do. Izzo is still a master coach. He just didn't have a guy who could be that kind of that wild card chess piece on the board where he could move him around and do all these different things with him and create these matchup problems. He kind of had a very standard kind of group, a very kind of standard team. And I think they were kind of the weak link in the Final Four on the men's side.
You listen to the Real Sports Guys. This is One Mike, our pre-championship special. I'm here with the Game Changer. He's dropping up, but knowledge. And so as we turn our attention to the semifinal games and starting with the Duke Michigan State game, where you know Duke led or actually won that game 81-61 by 20. They had 19 points from Winslow, 18 from Okafor, and 17 from Cook. They held the Spartans. Spartans came out the first couple of minutes knocking it down, but they held Spartans to less than 30% shooting in the first half. They demonstrated defensive toughness that I haven't seen Duke teams demonstrate at that level in a long time. You know, broke away there late in the second half. As you look at that game, how did it unfold? Where did it all go wrong for Michigan State? What did it say about Duke?
You know, I think Michigan State, they had long droughts of not being able to score, and that's been an Achilles heel for that team, that they don't have a guy who can get buckets consistently. Trice had been hot. Valentine had been hot. They got a little bit of help here and there from their bigs and Schilling and Costello. They had some big games to help them keep advancing through the tournament. They relied on their defense. And Duke is a really tough matchup. You got Tyus Jones. You have Cook. They have some bigs that can bring it off the bench. And then in the end, you got Winslow and Okafor, who I think are tough matchups across the board. Okafor is just a load to deal with inside. And then you got Winslow, who's a bit of a wild card. He's a 6'8", 6'9", kind of wing player. He's a lot like Decker, obviously more athletic than Decker, but just a tough guy to match up on because you can put a 6'5 guy on him, but then you lose in size, and he can take him inside. Or you can put, you know, a bigger guy on him, but then there's the foot speed issue. And so he's a really tough matchup, especially when you couple him with somebody like Okafor. How do you pick your poison in that particular situation? And as you can see, when Winslow is playing well, Duke goes to another level. He's that one piece, that X factor, that when he's playing well, they go to another level. But they just made it really difficult defensively. They've actually matured so much, and Coach K has done a really good job of making them a much better defensive team. At the beginning of the season, their defense was their weakest. That was their Achilles heel. That was their weak link, was that they couldn't defend at the level that they needed to defend at to be a championship caliber team. And they're playing that defense now. And again, Michigan State just didn't have an answer when you got guys who can just get buckets and you're trading baskets, but you're not getting anything on the other end. Michigan State, Izzo ran what he could. You know, he's a great coach, but you can only make such a good meal with subpar ingredients. You know, when you don't got the ingredients, I don't care how good of a chef you are, the meal can be good, but when you're going against a chef who's as equally as talented and they have better ingredients, their meal is going to wind up being better. Even if your meal is amazing, their meal is going to be amazing times two because they had better ingredients, and that's what you had in that game.
And then we turn our attention to the marquee matchup for the night. It lived up to its billing. Wisconsin winning over the Wildcats 71-64 by you know, Frank had 20 points, 11 rebounds. In fact, Kentucky had a stretch there where they were up, and it looked like, you know, they were going to close it out. Wisconsin had like three stops in a row. And what was strange about this was that Wisconsin out-rebounded Kentucky in that game. And, you know, not too many people thought that a team could ever really out-rebound Kentucky. But it was a battle. When you look at that game, you know, where did you see it go wrong for Kentucky? What was your analysis of that game as you watched it?
Well, as I was watching, you know, Kentucky shot really well in the first half. I mean, as a coach, you know, you have a team shoot that well, and you say either we're going to get blown out because they're going to continue to shoot this well, or they're going to come back down to earth, and the law of averages will come into play, and they will shoot poorly the second half. The thing we have to continue to do is keep doing what we're doing defensively and making them have to take the shots that they were taking. I didn't like any of the shots really Kentucky was getting. They were making a lot of tough shots in the first half. They were taking and making tough shots. I didn't feel like they were ever really getting anything offensively off of system or off of scheme. A lot of it was off of spacing and one-on-one kind of stuff, which you can live off of, but I didn't feel good about that. Wisconsin, I felt, was doing a better job of getting things for their players in rhythm off of driving kick, off of more ball movement, which I felt better at halftime that Wisconsin was in a better position the way they were playing to win the game. Now, things turned a little bit in the second half as Kentucky started to get more offensive rebounds. I mean, they had several possessions, you know, late. They didn't have a ton of offensive rebounds, but they had a couple possessions late where they got two shots, you know, and Wisconsin wasn't allowing them to do that. You let anybody get multiple looks at the basket, they're going to put them in. Kentucky's size started to cause Wisconsin problems. But overall, I thought it was a nip-and-tuck game, and it came down to the last couple of possessions. And the veteran team, that's what it boils down to, man, is having guys who can keep their composure. And Kentucky's a composed team. They're a good team. They were 38-0, you know, before this loss. So it wasn't like, you know, they were raw or green or inexperienced. But something's got to give. And you could see as the game wound down and it was getting close, you could see every time one of the Aaron Harrison caught the ball on the perimeter, the Badgers remembered last year, and they closed out super tight on him.
Yeah.
You know, on that shot he hit last year, Gossett gave him a couple feet. Gossett was 2 or 3 feet beyond the arc, and he still gave him room. This time he was in his shirt. You know what I mean? They were in their shirts like, not this time, not this time. So you had a team with a laser-like focus on making sure that they got past it, they got past this obstacle, they got over this challenge. And I don't know if Kentucky's guys, they were focused, but I don't know if they had that laser-like focus. And that's what it boils down to in a game where you have two really strong teams. Something's got to give. You're splitting hairs to see who's going to win the game, but somebody's going to win the game. And Wisconsin just happened to pull it out. Two great teams, two great games. If that had been a championship game, it would have been an all-time classic championship game. But it wasn't. And so Kentucky went down. And somebody was going to lose. And, you know, Wisconsin made the stops, got stops when they needed to. You know, three straight shot clock violations is pretty impressive.
And I was wondering why Cal went to the 1-4, you know, when you got someone like Towns who they hadn't really stopped. They contained, but they hadn't really stopped. And he was feeling his flow. And I know as we move to the aftermath, I know there was instructions probably to get it to him. And I know the Harrisons kind of took over and took some shots down the stretch. And I know people have questioned that. But as we look at the aftermath, you know, a lot's going to happen when you win 38 games and then you lose. You have the Harrisons walking off the court, I think, supposedly not shaking hands. You have the comment at the press conference. You have a lot of emotions after this. When you think about the aftermath, you know, you have people still trying to understand Wisconsin and what these guys are doing. I still think people are missing the fact that Decker's one of the best athletes on the floor, but we conceptualize what we think an athlete is, and people can't put him in that space like that, which is, I think people got to get past that. When you think about, as people were summing it up, like, what were your thoughts when you started hearing folks just all the stuff that was happening afterwards? How did they sum that up?
You know, for sake of not getting too deep on the intro, you know what I'm saying? The racial dynamics of this whole game, and you know, again, people say, you know, why are you always bringing race into it? Because I'm black. And I live race. You know what I'm saying? I can't every day wake up, I gotta recognize I'm black. I'm a black man in America. I gotta acknowledge that on a daily basis. So yeah, race is something that lives that sits in my living room every day. So I'm not bringing it into it. It came with me. All right. So you have the Kentucky players, and you know the dynamic. Well, first I want to start off with Kentucky fan base. I mean, if I see another grown man crying on TV. I know the little kid was crying, and he get a pass, right?
He get a pass.
Probably 7 or 8. He hadn't hit double digits yet. We all know once you hit double digits, that crying stuff's got to go. So he's probably 8, 9 years old. He still has, you know, he gets a pass. But I'm seeing grown Wildcat fans in the crowd crying. Come on, bruh. Come on now. 2, Kentucky, your fans. Why are you riding? You lost. You lost the basketball game. That is not anything to ride over. All right? Okay, you're lucky you wasn't in Ferguson. They would have done you wrong. Or maybe they would because it was a bunch of white college kids. Who knows? But either way, that's not anything to ride over. All right, you lost the basketball game. Don't be that spoiled. Then the whole situation with the Harrisons. Now, I'm not a Harrison fan. I'm not a fan of either of these guys. They've always kind of come off to me as very entitled, very arrogant. Guys who have had a lot handed to them. I don't know anything about their background. That's just the perception that I have from them from way, way, way afar. I don't have any personal experience with the kids and nothing. Just the articles I've read and the little bit that I know about them, they come off very arrogant. And again, that's my perception from afar. But if I'm reading that through the TV, then you might be arrogant. You know, if it's that strong coming off you, you know what I'm saying? It's like the cat that comes in after hooping and you can smell him as soon as you walk in the room, you stink, right? I don't need to have been up close to you to know that you stink. I can smell you from over here, so it must be strong. So it's the same thing. If you're arrogant and I can tell that without even really, and I can get that vibe from you without really knowing you, then it might be some arrogance there, you know, and it might be some pretty strong arrogance. But I wasn't upset with the with his comment per se, right? I was an athlete, a young man, and if you put a microphone in front of me after a major game where I competed my heart out, I may have felt slighted by the refs. We'll talk about the refs in a second. I would have had that same thought when asked about my opponent. What you would have heard instead was a long, deep breath. And during that deep breath, what I would have been saying in my head is probably exactly what Aaron Harrison said out loud. You know what I mean? I just wouldn't have said it out loud. But I would have said the same thing in my head. Like, forget Kaminsky. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a competitor. Like, I want to give him no credit. You know what I mean? I want to talk about this dude right now. You know what I mean? We just lost him. I'm angry at that person. So I understand that completely. But I also think you just got to handle yourself better, you know? Is it a big deal? No. He apologized. It's done, as far as I'm concerned. The not shaking hands, to me, again, and all the Kentucky guys kind of had to, and again, I don't fault them for it. It is what it is, though, right? The camera don't lie. I'm not faulting them for it. I'm not judging them for it. But it's a teachable moment that, you know, in that situation, you want to handle yourself differently because they came off as, like, upset, you know, disgruntled middle school kids. In the press conference, you know, the body language was terrible, you know, the way they answered questions, and it kind of fed off of each other. Like, it was okay to be, like, sulking in that moment. And I get it, and I understand it. Just do better next time. You know what I'm saying? That'd be my advice. Do better next time. You know, get these kids coached up. Do better next time. The rest of the game was super questionable. The NCAA's got to figure out how to deal with that. That's too important of a game to have it come, have so many questionable calls not be handled in the way that they've been handled previously. The shot to the head, I just watched the game. I watched several conference tournaments, and I saw situations where guys were making basketball moves, ripping the ball through, accidentally hit a guy with an elbow, and that's a flagrant one. in that situation, there's no basketball move being made. There's head to, and in those situations, the explanation was, well, any contact to the head is going to result in a flagrant one. Well, there was contact to the head of a player. That should have been a flagrant one, you know, by the letter of the rule book, but it wasn't called such. You know, the Gasser charge, you know, the shot, the Nigel Hayes' basket after the shot clock. It was a shot clock violation. It should have been called. You know, all those things were mishandled by the refs. And it seemed they got shook in the moment. One bad call led to another bad call, and the refs were off their game. And it was bad both ways. You know, it was bad both ways. And you kind of, if you're a Wisconsin player, coach, fan, you're just glad you came out on the right side of it. If you're Kentucky, you may be a little bit butthurt about it. But it is what it is. Yeah. Both teams have still had a chance to win in spite of all of the miscues on the ref. It still came down to the players had to win the game, and the players had an opportunity to win the game. So, you know, those are my takeaways from the game. The other takeaway I have is, you know, people talk about Calipari, and I think they say this to take away from Calipari, but all the NBA talent he has on his roster, man, he's got two guys who I think will ever amount to anything in the NBA. All right, he got two dudes. He didn't have a bunch of NBA talent. He has a bunch of hype. He has a bunch of guys who will get drafted. But none of outside of two of those guys, I'd be surprised if anybody else stuck in the league beyond a rookie contract. All right? Towns is going to be a beast in the league. Willie Cauley-Stein might make it in the league if he gets with the right team. The rest of those guys are not going to be good NBA players. They're going to be Daniel Orton, Marquise Teague, those guys who went to Kentucky, lived off the hype, got picked in the first round. Where are they now? That's what he has right now. He has a bunch of dudes who are end of the first round, possibly second round guys outside of those two. Booker, liability on defense. I just didn't see it. I watched them all tournament. I heard people talking them up. I didn't see it. Trey Lyles might have an opportunity, but I think he's too much of a tweener. None of their guards, I think, are pro guards. Ulis is too small. And doesn't score well enough. If you're gonna be a small guard, you gotta be a dynamo scorer. You know, you gotta be a Nate Robinson, you know, Aaron Brooks type guy who can go out and just light it up. He's not that. The Harrisons, they just don't have it. You know, they just don't have it. They don't seem to be quick enough. They don't seem to be strong enough or good enough shooters. They don't have any particular thing that they do well enough at an NBA level, in my opinion. Dekari Johnson, you know, again, I see Daniel Orton. I don't really see him becoming a major factor in the league as far as being a big. He's not athletic enough. He doesn't really protect the rim. He's not really skilled. And to be an NBA, a strong NBA big, you got to be skilled. You got to be offensively, defensively skilled. I don't see it with him. So I see two guys on that roster who are NBA dudes. So hats off to Cal because he makes those guys look like pro players, which is what he promised them. Go ahead.
I think you hit it right on the head on that. I mean, I think, and that's where it's hard being in that situation to be reflective enough to know that you need to player development, right? To know that you are one of two people ready to be one and done. In fact, those kids probably could be real solid pro players beyond their first contract if they stayed into their junior year. That long enough development probably would do the things that you're saying that they need to do. Some of them need to be in a position where they're leading. You know, you're right. Cal has got them ready for that first rookie contract, and if he does that, he's done his job. But if they want to have sustainable careers, you know, there's no way for him in his system right now to really pivot to him on that way. Because then he's kind of going back. So he's kind of caught in a catch-22 unless a kid is reflective enough to know they need to come back. And that's the challenge he has.
And unless the kid's got chops. Like, all those guys all those guys have talent. Each of those guys, every guy that I named has talent. They have NBA talent. Whether they become NBA players depends on their chops. And I call it chops. It's work ethic, right? Draymond Green, he got chops. You know what I mean? Guys who will come in early, leave late. If any of those guys are that kind of player, then they might stick beyond that contract. But if they're not, right now they don't have the skill set. And so if they go to the league with the skill set that they have, they're going to get drafted late. They're going to go to a good team. And at that point, either you're, you know, fighting to get into the lineup or, you know, you're sitting on the outside looking in, you know.
they're not going to be stars on a good team. They're not going to play pivotal roles on a good team unless they're not with the skill sets that they have right now. They don't have a Draymond Green skill set who was coming in a seasoned basketball player with a high basketball IQ who could go out there and do some different things on the court, but also had chops. And he was going to go out there and find his way into the rotation. I don't know if all those guys have that, you know. So,
well, Gabe Chaney, the moment is you're doing your thing. I'm saying the moment has come. I'm going to give you another shot, brother. I know right now you don't have anybody in the finals. So right now, what we need now is your quick analysis of the finals and who you think is going to prevail tomorrow night.
All right. Quick analysis. I think this is a game. These are two teams that played earlier in the year. Remembering that game from earlier in the year, you have a Duke team that won in a game where they shot over 65%, with so close to 65% from the field against the Wisconsin team in the Kohl Center. For Duke to win this game, Okafor is going to have a really big – he's going to have to be what he's supposed to be as far as being a dominant player. He's probably going to have to play like he feels like he should have won Player of the Year over Kaminsky. And he's going to have to come out and prove that. The other area where I think Wisconsin is a little bit vulnerable is in the backcourt. Tyus Jones and Cook are in a position to have a real strong impact on this game because of their quickness. Gasser and Koenig are going to have to keep those guys under control because I think that could tip the scales a little bit. I think, you know, when you look at Okafor and Kaminsky, that's going to be a little bit of a push. You look at Winslow to Decker, that's going to be a little bit of a push. For Wisconsin, I think Nigel Hayes and the role he plays is going to be huge. And I think for Duke, their backcourt, Tyus Jones and Cook, are going to be huge as far as which side pushes, tips the scales towards the other team. For the Badgers, it'll be their wings, their secondary wings, Duye Dukin and Nigel Hayes. For Duke, I think it'll be Tyus Jones and Cook in the backcourt. I think those are the areas where I see each team having a slight advantage. In the end, I think Wisconsin, they're more veteran team. They're very much driven and focused. They're playing really loose right now. The moment is never too big for these guys. I like the feel of this team, and I think going into this game, you know, I feel like they have an advantage over Duke. Knowing that Duke beat them by 10 at home, shooting 65% from the field. You know, you shoot 65% from the floor, you should beat somebody by 25, 30 points. When you shoot that well. For Duke to have only beat them by 10, and also to be missing a player who was really key in that game, you know, Rasheed Suleiman, I think Wisconsin's probably feeling like they can come up with a recipe to win this game, and I think they will. I think Wisconsin pulls it out. I think they win a national championship. And, you know, I think they'll be celebrating down on State Street in Madison.
Yeah, I hope my office is in shape. I'll tell you what, y'all. The game changer delivered. You went for 25, 30. You actually, forget it. You put on a Kyrie Irving 57 tonight. I mean, I was just out the way. You know, it was like Popovich was over there trying to call a 22nd timeout. They couldn't stop you, man. They couldn't stop you. You gave them the eye. You're looking at it with your good eye. You're looking at it with your good eye today. Man, it's such a pleasure. You know, you're going to be a staple on this one, Mike, because you just deliver it for me every time I bring you here. You know, the EP is fresh, is out here, is ready to go. We're about to go and chop it up and put it out there for distribution. We loving it, man. Thank you for doing it. And, you know, I'm going to try and bring you on. We're going to wrap up again after the tournament's over, get your reflection on it. And I love to get your projections based on some of these tournament games of people who you think can really go to that next level when you look at the field and how they played. So, man, thanks for being here. Thanks for dropping it with me. And until next time, everybody, this is One Mike. Peace. Take it out.
All right.